I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This Saturday, 500 cities around the world and perhaps more will be filled with people who are supporting science. It's the March for Science with support from more than 200 official science organizations. In Washington, there will be a four-hour rally featuring Bill Nye, the science guy, a woman who helped produce insulin from bacteria, and one of our guests this hour, Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, who is the pediatrician who helped expose lead poisoning in Flint. She is one of the co-leaders of the whole March on Science. A molecular biologist who works as a science communicator at Columbia University says, "I see the Science March as a coming out party for scientists who have always been careful about getting involved in political advocacy and activism. I don't think that we should see this as a one-time event." So what is of great concern to scientists? We thought we would ask scientists that question this hour, and you as well, because you're very interested in science. People who listen to public radio are. We do have two guests with us. Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha is an assistant professor of pediatrics at Michigan State University's College of Human Medicine and director of the pediatric residency program at Hurley Children's Hospital in Flint. She is honorary national chair of the March for Science, and she really was very, very instrumental in exposing the water crisis in Flint. We'll hear that story during the course of this hour. And Dr. Hanna Atisha, thank you very, very much for being with us. Good afternoon to you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Also joining us, Professor of Chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Professor Bassam Shakashiri, who is a distinguished chair for the Wisconsin IDEA at the university, director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, former president of the American Chemical Society. He's done a great deal of work bringing science to schools, promoting excellence in education and science at all levels. His demonstrations in the teaching of chemistry, and he is known for his leadership in national science policy. Professor Shakashiri, thank you so much for being with us. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Very happy to be with you both.
Yeah, I'm very happy to have both of you. Let's start with you, Dr. Hanna Atisha, about the March for Science and why it is. I want to hear why both of you are participating. This is becoming a very big march. Why are scientists marching?
I think I would respond by saying, why not? And how can we not? I mean, it is obvious for anybody who is around these days to realize the benefits of science. As a pediatrician, my everyday is giving children vaccines, advising them on injury prevention, and all of that and all the advances we have made is because of science. And we are at a day and an age where that basic credibility of science is under attack. So it is time for scientists, for physicians, for anybody who cares about science to really get out of our labs, to get out of our, you know, exam rooms and into the streets and really more importantly into the halls of government and really convey the importance of science, which we don't do a good job of doing. So that is why I'm marching. I'm marching for my kids, I'm marching for future generations, but most importantly, I'm marching to really, show the world and show our current administration that science is something that we value.
It's not very often, Professor Shakashiri, that you see a lot of scientists marching, is it? It's kind of unusual.
Well, we would like it to become more usual. We promote self-expression. We promote the importance of communicating science to non-scientists. It's a very important responsibility that we have in the science community. We do a very good job communicating science with each other. We do it very, very well through the scientific literature, through conferences, through seminars, and so on. We have to become better at communicating science to the general public. And this march is one event. I anticipate this to be one event in a process that will continue establishing the presence of science in our society. Kathleen, science and technology are the engines that drive our economy. All the advances that we enjoy now in society are the result of advances in science and technology. You name it, whether it's in healthcare, transportation, communication, whatever it is, it is the result of great advances in science and in technology. And that's why we want this event, which is being held on Earth Day, to be the beginning of a new venture and a new adventure and a new collaboration between scientists, engineers, and the general public.
Mm-hmm. So you're marching for probably what we've heard most about is global warming and whether or not we're going to adhere to a Paris Accord. The president evidently is rethinking his position on this, but many comments have been made about climate change being a hoax. Is it climate change that you are most concerned about? Is it clean water and air? You certainly dealt with horrors in Flint, Michigan. Is it people coming from foreign countries to be able to enter universities in the United States, or is the travel ban affecting those people? What areas are of concern, and will you be highlighting those, Dr. Hannah Atisha?
Sure, Kathleen. I think it's really all of those. I think a lot of this did start with the climate change deniers, but, you know, we see that same attack on vaccines. We have made tremendous strides in terms of immunizations and childhood health through vaccines, and that's being attacked. We see the attack of regulations that protect our air and our water, so these environmental protections are being attacked. Obviously, NIH funding, federal funding for research on scientific issues so that we can continue to advance these scientific discoveries, that's under attack. And you know, the threat of recruiting and collaborating with people from all over the world is under attack. I am a first-generation immigrant. All of our Nobel Prize winners, except for Bob Dylan, were immigrants. We need to continue to foster a global environment that leads to collaboration and continued advancements in science. Mm-hmm. So it's for all of those reasons and more that I am marching.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. These are very, very important reasons. The March for Science, as I have said already, in my view, is a beginning of a new adventure and a new venture between science community, and the general public. Kathleen, the society is in two sectors. There's the science-rich sector and the science-poor sector. Who's in the science-rich sector? Colleges and universities, some high schools, very few high schools, parts of industry, the national laboratories. Who's in the science-poor sector? Everyone else. Mm. It is incumbent upon us in the science-rich sector to effectively communicate what science is about, what science is capable of achieving. It is very important that we stop the widening of the gap between the science-rich sector and the science-poor sector. So I'm an advocate of science literacy for everyone. Science is vital to democracy. Let me just quote how important this point is.
Sure.
And I quote from Abraham Lincoln, who said...
Oh, great. Okay.
Who said, public sentiment is everything. With public sentiment, nothing can fail. Without it, nothing can succeed. Mm. So we're interested in communicating our values. We're interested in communicating what science is, what science is capable of achieving, the limitations of science. You know, science is a way of looking at the world. We all ask questions. We have curiosity. We try to satisfy this curiosity. We're all dazzled by complexity. We try to reduce ambiguity. We try to use reason. We look for simplicity. We learn from our failure in science. We want to communicate the process of science. We're not trying to get everybody to become a scientist. We're trying to get people to become science fans, people who appreciate what science and technology are all about, people who want to be supportive of scientific inquiry. And perhaps some of them would like to join us in the scientific inquiry activities. Mm. But the most important goal is to communicate the values of science to the public at large.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure many are going to be joining you in the march, which will take place on April 22nd. Dr. Hannah Atisha, there also is a time, and maybe this is a lot of scientists deciding they're going to take the microphone in many ways this weekend and beyond, but there was a time when you as a doctor really decided that you had to take the microphone to draw attention to a very important issue in Flint, Michigan, and your scientific research and your study and your caring and your compassion led to the breaking of the Flint water crisis story and national attention on this issue. I would imagine that as a scientist, you weren't necessarily comfortable in having a news conference about this, but you deemed it crucial.
Absolutely. So in September of 2015, we held a press conference releasing the data that children had increased lead in their bodies, and that is not what academics do. We publish, we present at national conferences, but we could not wait for that peer review process. Even when it's expedited, it can take months. So we took a stand and we spoke out, and we were attacked, and it was a risk, and my credibility was on the line. I was actually called an unfortunate researcher that I was splicing and dicing numbers, and anybody who does any science, that's just like gives you strokes. But it was a risk that we had to take, because every day that went by was exposing more children to a neurotoxin in our water. So I'm hoping that, my participation in this encourages more people to take risks, because as scientists, as physicians, as researchers, we're all trying to make the world a better place in our own ways. And we live in these bubbles where we publish in journals and we've become hyper-specialized. And it's scary for us to step out of our boxes and do things that are not traditional. This march is scary for a lot of scientists. They're very much used to staying in their labs and writing their little papers and talking to their little professional societies. So it is important for us sometimes to cross those lines, especially when a community's, public health and their safety is at stake. So I hope that my involvement inspire other scientists, especially, younger women scientists, to use their very credible voices to advocate for their communities. Communities are yearning for the credibility of science and as scientists to be their advocates.
Well, and you certainly have a whole lot of communities looking at their water now, too. It's
yep,
a national
absolutely.
Issue, isn't it?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Let's look at the current...
Kathleen?
Yes.
Kathleen, may I make an observation about the tremendous contribution that Dr. Atisha has made? It reminds me of a Nobel laureate who, at the time he made his discoveries about the ozone layer, received similar treatment. His name is Sherwood Rowland. He later was recognized, along with two colleagues, with the Nobel Prize. And he said at a meeting at the White House, he said, and I'm going to use his exact words, to make the point that Mona just made. Is it enough for a scientist simply to publish a paper? Isn't it the responsibility of scientists? If you believe that you have found something that can affect the environment, isn't it your responsibility to actually do something about it? Mm. Enough so that action actually takes place? If not us, who? If not now, when?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah, that is. Let's look specifically, before we go to phone calls, at the proposed budget, the Trump administration budget. I'm interested in students. There are a number of students, I read, maybe more than 15,000 students from countries who are on the revised order list who have come to the United States to study science. The question is, how many students are not being allowed in now, and do you fear the participation of foreign students from all over the world who have added a whole lot to science in this country will be forbidden from being able to come to study? I also would like for your response on a proposed budget for the 2018 fiscal year. Science appears that it's going to lose out on money. The proposal includes a reduction in discretionary items of $54 billion. That means funding for the Department of Energy, the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, for basic research, for environmental research, for energy, for agriculture. How bad are the cuts to science? And what about foreign contributions? I'd like to hear both of your response to that. Doctor, want to start with you?
sure, yeah. So it's absolutely frightening. You know, if these actually come into play, it's scary. In terms of the foreign students, so that, you know, if you add the foreign physicians that train here, Flint as an example, it's really hard for us to recruit American-trained docs. The majority of our docs are foreign-trained docs. And in all of rural America, it's usually foreign-trained docs that fill those positions. Mm. So it has direct patient care implications, as well as obviously the scientific and research implications. So that is frightening. In terms of and the climate as well. So here we are. If we ban these certain countries, we're also creating a climate where people from other countries that aren't on these ban lists don't want to come. Like here is a country that is not receptive and responsive to immigrants. Why should I want to go there? Let me go to somewhere else in Europe or another country that's doing this groundbreaking research. So it has incredible ripple effects, creating this culture, this pro-America, anti-immigrant culture. And I forgot what your second question was.
Second question was about, let's give it first to Professor Shakashiri, the budget. What's going to happen with science if the budget passes, Professor?
That's a big if the budget passes. This is a proposal that the president has made, and the Congress is to take up these different proposals. Historically, presidential proposals of this variety are declared dead on arrival in the Congress. But we live in a different environment right now. It's not really clear how this is going to play out. The consequences of the budget cuts, if they come through, or even a fraction of them comes through, will be terrific, will be horrific, actually. They will affect the functioning of our colleges and universities. They will affect the progress of research. They might put an end. They might stifle progress in research. So, but Kathleen, let me not be alarmist about
all
this.
Right.
Let us allow the process to take place. Let us work with our elected officials at the federal level, at the state level, but nowadays especially at the federal level with respect to the federal budget, so that science and technology, all of education, all that is important for the progress of society, not only gets a fair hearing, but results in good action. So I'm optimistic about the outcome of all this. I, too, don't like the sound of it as it is right now. But I'm optimistic in that there may be adjustments and changes that are made. The United States, my adopted country, it has been welcoming over the ages to people from everywhere. The United States is a place where progress in education, in science, in open inquiry is practiced, and this is one of the main characteristics that distinguish us from all other societies. That's why we enjoy the freedom that we have in America, so that we can pursue open inquiry, that we can then come up with new discoveries, and we can translate these discoveries into societal action that benefits society.
You are an optimist, aren't you?
I'm a realistic optimist, and that is why I'm participating in the march on Saturday. That is why I continue not only to do but to live what I've been doing for the past 47 years as a faculty member here at University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm very proud to be a faculty member here. I'm very proud to be an American citizen. I remember distinctly the day when I was sworn in as a U.S. citizen. The presiding judge, the late Judge James Doyle, the father of our former governor,
yes.
He said, not only to me, but all the others who were being sworn in, he said many good things, but the one that sticks out, he said, enjoy your freedoms. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your freedoms.
Yeah. Let's welcome phone calls. We'll take them in a moment. We have yet to see how many people will march, but if other marches are an indication, you're probably going to see many, many people, because there are 500 cities so far all over the world that are participating in an international march for science on April 22nd, this coming Saturday. One of the organizers of the D.C. march, Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, is with us. She is the one who found out about and pinpointed the problem of lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. She held a press conference. She drew attention to that issue where so many, many children had elevated levels of lead, and she talked about how preventable that was, really drew national attention to an incredibly important story, not just in Flint, but all over the country. She's going to be marching and speaking at the D.C. rally. Also joining us is Professor Basham Shakashiri. He is a distinguished chair for the Wisconsin Ideas, professor of chemistry, distinguished at UW-Madison, director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, former president of the American Chemical Society. He is with us. And we're interested in your thoughts about all of this. Obviously, there are a lot of directions to go. But it is, to me, I've never seen anything like a March for Science before in this country. Why it is, and maybe some of you are participating, what are the issues that are of greatest concern to you? Are they environmental issues? Are you concerned about water and about the quality of air in this country? Are you concerned about some people in the administration's comments about climate change? Are you concerned about the amount of money that will be taken from the National Institutes for Health, from research programs for science? We'd like very much to hear from you. So call, okay? Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is @KDunnShow. Do you share the professor's optimism, realistic optimism, that marches like these will make a difference, that policy may change, funds won't be cut as much? People who would love to study science in this country, who'd love to study medicine from foreign countries, will be allowed eventually. To you in a moment on the Ideas Network. Lots of phone calls coming in. Let's go to Tara in Minocqua. Hi, Tara. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Tara in Minocqua.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to announce our satellite march. We're way up here in the Northwoods, where there's a lot of great lake research, and we will be having a satellite march on the 22nd, starting at 10 a.m. at Calvary Lutheran, just off 51.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, way up in Minocqua.
Way up in Minocqua. And, you know, it's amazing how many people are interested. I think we've got 100 people so far who've said that they are interested, and we're just a tiny little town. So that's kind of amazing.
That is. Professor Shakashiri, what do you know about what's going on in Wisconsin? Will there be many marches in our state?
My understanding is that there will be over a dozen marches in different locations around the state, including Madison, the one I will participate in, and I'll be making a few remarks there. There will be booths and exploration stations for people to come and actually do some science.
Oh.
I think it's really, really important to communicate what science is and how science works to everyone who participates. And Kathleen, let me just say a word to my fellow scientists who are in your listening audience. In science, we do what we do because it interests us. That's what I do. That's what Mona does. It satisfies our curiosity. We enjoy it. But we have a responsibility to humanity as a whole, and that is the essence of what this march is about. It's not enough for us to just be scientists. We have to be responsible, and we have to be scientist citizens. My call is for my fellow scientists to be scientist citizens. As scientist citizens, we have an obligation to use our skills for the benefit of all. That means we have to adhere to high values and virtues as scientists and citizens to advance science and to serve society. We have to try to achieve science literacy among the general public. Science literacy does not imply a detailed knowledge of chemistry or biology or geology, but a broad understanding and appreciation of what science is capable of achieving, yes, and equally important, what science cannot accomplish. I think this is the message of this march. It is the message of what's going to happen beyond the march. So science literacy is really crucial. It will enable the public to make informed choices and to reject shams, quackery, unproven conjecture, and avoid being bamboozled into making foolish decisions when matters of science and technology are concerned. And that's why we in science have to engage in respectful conversations with everyone in society. Mm-hmm. We have to respect the other person. I will say this. The first purpose of any conversation about science with someone else is to have a second conversation.
Dr. Atisha, what's going to be happening in D.C. on Saturday?
I think it's going to be absolutely crazy. I think there's going to be many, many people, many, many speakers. There's going to be teach-ins. I know there's going to be sessions for children to be hands-on engaged in science. Bill Nye, the science guy, is going to be there. He's my honorary co-chair. I think I'm doing this just so that I can get a selfie with him. I'm really excited about that. But I think it's going to be a lot of excitement. And as said before, I think it is just the beginning. It's just the beginning of hopefully many people who aren't, you know, traditionally involved in activism to stay involved.
Are you then going to be doing lobbying? Are scientists doing lobbying now on various issues?
I think, you know, this is a continuation or the beginning of lobbying. It's Saturday, so, the halls of Congress are not open. Right. So I don't think there's going to be the direct conversations with our congressional folks. But I think this whole march is a lobbying event.
Let's go to more phone calls. Tara, thanks for your call. John in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, John.
Hi, good afternoon. I think your guest alluded to what I was going to say. I think the results of science are always going to be challenged, and obviously we're in tough times as far as that goes. But what really amazes me is how so many people can ignore really what's happening to the scientific process, if you will. The idea that we can just spew things that have no proof, and we are living in a society where that's almost becoming accepted. And the idea that, you don't have to prove what you say is, to me, it's just a fundamental a threat to humanity. I just think, I think raising kids and trying to teach them about, figuring things out. And, it's really scary to me. And I'd just like to get your guest comment.
Yes, I'd like to get both of them to comment. Professor?
As I said before, we have two sectors in society, science rich and science poor. But let me also say the importance of connecting, having good connections between those two sectors is crucial. Not that everything that we face as human beings is scientific in nature. Science is a way of looking at the world. Humans have other needs that may not be satisfied by science. But I'm a strong advocate, as you heard me say, about science literacy for everyone. It's essential that we have good connectivity between scientists and others in society. It is crucial that we have the proper connections so that good judgments are exercised when decisions are made. It is really important for all of us to know that science and society have what is essentially a social contract. But this social contract enables great intellectual achievements that we know about, but it also comes with mutual expectations of benefiting the human condition and mm-hmm. protecting our planet. And so the responsibilities of the scientists are not only in the laboratory. Mm-hmm. We have other responsibilities. Executing these other responsibilities has to be done in a different manner than the way in which we do our bench research.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, I'm wondering, Dr. Hanna Atisha, mm-hmm. When you found out that lead was to blame and you had tested so many very young children who had dangerously high levels of lead, there were still people who said, oh, there's nothing wrong with the water in Flint. There are people who are still saying, oh, there's no global warming. That's not true at all. There are people who are denying it. Evolution didn't happen, et cetera. How do you counter? How did you counter that in Flint? How do you, those people who, against all evidence, said, "Ah, that's not right."
Yeah, so Flint is a perfect example of what can happen when science is dismissed. Our Department of Environmental Quality spokesperson said, you know, everybody can relax. There's nothing wrong, despite having the data of these elevated lead levels in the water. Mark Edwards is this renowned water expert that came into Flint and used citizen science. He paired up with the citizens of Flint to prove that there was lead in the water, and he was bullied. He was called a magician that would pull rabbits out of hats as if he was just making up these lead and water numbers. And then obviously I was also dismissed and attacked, and my science was dismissed and attacked. So it was almost a bullying of scientists, a bullying of the facts and the credibility and the truth. And then finally, you know, in Flint, the House of Cards fell when evidence was brought forward that children were being poisoned. It never should have gotten to the point of my research where children were being poisoned. It should have ended where that first mom was holding the jug of brown water and saying, hey, there's lead in my water. So it was kind of this, you know, a perfect storm for that House of Cards to finally fall. But, you know, even a very credible MacArthur genius scientist was dismissed and ridiculed during this process. So this is what can happen when government does not believe in science, where austerity rules, where governments, you know, run like a business, and science is missed. So we need to elevate the voices in of public health, of science, in policy making. So there's a push, for example, of health in all policies, of having, say, physicians and scientists at these decision processes, so things like this can be hopefully prevented, but, you know, or acted on earlier than need be.
Thanks, John, so much for your call. Anne in Pewaukee, hi.
Hi. I was just so glad to hear that this is going on. My Aunt Lois was a doctor of microbiology at University of Wisconsin, and she was a member of the World Health Organization. So I know if she were living, she'd be marching right alongside you guys. Mm. And I was just wondering if the World Health Organization is involved at all.
I have no idea. There is a very, very, very long list of partners who have signed up for the March of Science. I don't know if WHO is involved, but they're an incredible organization that does some really awesome international health work.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just scientists we should let people know who are marching. There are people who are concerned about science, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's anybody. So I encourage you to come march in your aunt's place, or, you know, these are just regular, you know, all kinds of people are coming out and participating in this march. So you don't have to have a PhD, you don't have to have an MD, you just have to care.
Thanks so much, Anne, for your call. Judith in Eagle River. Hi, Judith.
Hello. My concern is this. I like the comments about science literacy and the fact that we have limited science literacy in this country. This is the education system in the country seems not to be doing the job that it could be doing, and it hasn't been for a very long time. Possibly we are still looking at science and math instruction from the lens of the 50s. And at the university level, it's difficult recruiting students to go into education for science and math. Consequently, we have teachers who are ill-prepared to develop a literacy. And if we don't look at education, we are going to continue having to import the expertise into this country.
Well, Professor Shakashiri, you've looked at education. What do you say?
I agree with the comments and the feelings that are being expressed here. But let me say, we should all try to fully understand the situations that we face now. And let me make a plea to everyone in the listening audience, not only people who are scientists and people who advocate for science, but to everyone in the listening audience. Let us not point the finger. Let us help point the way. And this is different than what we do in scientific research. This is something that we have to work with others in society. We have to learn how to be effective in communicating the values and the virtues of what we do in science. And there are three very important elements for these conversations that I'm advocating. The one element is respect, the second element is trust, and the third element is confidence. Now, I respect each other as fellow human beings. I'm not saying we respect what someone else is saying or someone else is misspeaking and so on. Just respect each other as fellow human beings, and then we should be trustworthy, and we should also have confidence in what we're saying. And everything that Dr. Atisha has advocated and has done exemplifies those three human elements that I just outlined here. But it's very important. I would like to repeat this. The purpose of the first conversation with anyone about science is to have another conversation and not to be cut off. So it's really critical that we in science develop skills and alter our attitudes in terms of communicating with non-scientists.
And thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Julie in Appleton. Hey, Julie.
Hi.
Hi.
So I was on Capitol Hill last week lobbying with the Hands-On Science Partnership.
Oh.
We're really trying to get funding in the K-12 arena for kids to actually do science instead of just do simulations on computers.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people that we met with were staffers for the Appropriations Committee because they're trying to get the continuing resolution through and do an omnibus before that to take them to fiscal 18. And one of the interesting things that we learned is people really believe that NIH is going to have increased funding instead of decreased because Roy Blunt is the chair of the Appropriations Committee. And he is very concerned about a pandemic happening, and so he wants lots of money to go into research. That said, they think that the money for that will come out of education in the K-12 arena. So what we were trying to say is if you want to have researchers someday, you also need to have money in that K-12 arena. Otherwise, you're going to lose kids. Typically, in science, and I'm sure your guests can confirm this, kids lose interest around grades 4 or 5, and then you just don't get them back, which is why we have so many doctors from overseas or engineers that are brought over from overseas, et cetera.
Right. Well, this is interesting news that there was interest, at least in funding NIH. Have you heard similar news, Dr. Atisha?
No, I think everything I've heard is that NIH is set to be cut. Funding for, you know, healthcare research, all kind of research is set to be cut. And, you know, I have two little kids. I have a third grader and a fifth grader. And my kids can't actually come to the March for Science with me on Saturday because they're both participating in a district-wide science Olympiad.
Oh, really?
And they don't even want to come. I'm like, don't you want to come? They're like, no, we don't want to miss science Olympiad because we're building rockets and we're making graphs and stuff like that. So I think it is so critically important for our young people to get exposed to hands-on experimental science so that they can get that interest sparked and they can keep that interest and hopefully can be a career.
And they can see Mom on television later, right?
Yeah, they're sick of seeing Mom.
Thanks, Julie, for your call. Dan in Hudson. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm planning on attending the March in St. Paul with my family, and we were curious if there was any popular slogans or sayings that we could put on banners to represent our cause.
Shakashiri, Professor Shakashiri, are you carrying a sign?
I'll be speaking. I'll be wearing my T-shirt. Science is fun.
There you go. Science is fun.
So that's one. That's one message.
Uh-huh.
Another message is science is for health. Science is for the economy. You name it. Science has to do with every aspect of our daily lives, and so people should feel creative in expressing themselves as they engage in hands-on, minds-on activities. It's not just the marching; it is the conversations that will take place, that should take place between those who are marching and others, including conversations among the marchers themselves. If the marchers themselves can increase their capacity to speak respectfully and be trustworthy and have confidence about the science that they're dealing with, I think that would be a big accomplishment.
Mm. That's your idea.
One of the official logos for the march is Science, Not Silence. Mm. There, if you go on the website, March for Science, you can also see some T-shirts which have different logos and slogans. One of the best shirts I've seen so far, I think it was actually a sign, had the Lorax, and it just said, unless. So unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing's going to get better. It's not.
Mm. There are some suggestions. Got them?
Great. Thank you. And I'm going to be carrying a peace flag, so that's my point.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for your call. We'll take more calls in a moment. The March for Science is coming up this Saturday, April 22nd. We're talking to two people who are participating, both scientists, one from Flint, Michigan, who let the world know about the water in Flint, Michigan. She is assistant professor of pediatrics at Michigan State University College of Human Medicine and director of the pediatric residency program at Hurley Children's Hospital in Flint, Michigan, where she saw very young children with very high levels of lead. She found it in the water and alerted attention, all of our attention, to the water crisis there. Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha is with us, and she is the co-chair, along with Bill Nye, the science guy, of the march, and will be in D.C. But there are marches in at least 500 cities all over the world, so we're talking about them this hour. More phone calls momentarily. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network. And let me ask both of you, Annie from Green Bay sends this email. I wonder if there is a way that regular people can mobilize to expose and protest the budget cuts that strategically remove protections on water, air, soil, and reject scientific facts. Because you work in the water area. Dr. Atisha, what do you think?
I think the best thing for you to do is to contact your legislators. So our legislators are just regular people. They value your input. You put them in office. You live in their district. So talk to them. Write them a letter or call them. Ask to meet with them. Share your concerns. They want to hear your voices, and you need your voice to be heard.
Thank you for your email. Robert in Amherst Junction. Hello.
Hi. I'm sorry to disagree with some of the members of your panel, but I'm afraid that if we focus on these issues with too much Pollyanna, we're not really focusing on in the right place. Mr. Shakashiri, I'm sorry to say this because I really respect you and I love your work, but your focus on not pointing fingers and on respect, trust, and confidence, and on scientific literacy is missing the biggest point, in my view.
And Robert, what do you think people should be doing?
The biggest point is that I think Governor Walker and a lot of the people in the Republican Party who block information from the scientific community and choose to make decisions contrary to scientific evidence are not illiterate. I don't think they're scientifically illiterate. I think they know. But they choose to do the wrong thing because of money or power.
And you're saying that they need to be called out? Where are you going from there, Robert?
Exactly. I think we need to call out the fact that, you know, we can't focus on literacy. They're literate.
Okay. Yeah, we hear you. Professor Shakashiri.
Yeah, I think that I don't want anyone, especially you, Robert, to misunderstand what I'm saying. Thank you for your comments about my work. It's not beneath us to point the finger. We want to be effective. And it is more effective to help point the way. And you help point the way by bringing out the facts and the consequences of the facts. Now, in the political dialogue and the political encounters that we enter into, we have to be careful and not to compromise the integrity of science. And you didn't suggest that we should compromise it. I'm just trying to emphasize this point. But the discourse with others in the community is not scientific in nature. It is social in nature. And that is the point that you are underscoring in terms of what I said. I want to clarify that. So by helping point the way, I mean all of us come to agreement about what it is that is valid, what it is that's not valid. And if something is not valid, we call it off. We call it right away. I hope I was not misunderstood. And I thank you, Robert, for bringing up this point here to help me clarify it.
Thank you, Robert. Let's go to Martha in Wauwatosa. Hi, Martha.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a more lighthearted comment, but I'm a knitter and knitted several of the pussy hats for the March on Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And the knitting community, and I mean nationwide and beyond, is knitting brain hats. For,
awesome.
For this march, and they are either a knitted hat or a baseball cap on top of which are put a knitted cord that wraps around in many curly cues to look like brains. And I knitted one for my daughter, who's a science nut. She's 30, lives in Portland, Washington, and she'll be wearing it there. And I know there are many others who'll have them. So I just thought I'd let you know about that.
Thank you. Do you have one of those? Doctor?
No, I totally need one of those.
Yeah, so
I need to call my mom right away and have her needles get, cracking to make me one of those.
Professor, do you have one of those?
I'd like to. But Kathleen, may I just make another observation? My greatest concern is what is going to happen after the march. I really don't want this to be a single event. I would like it to be, as I think others also want it to be, part of a process of engagement, meaningful engagement, respectful in the dialogue that we have with each other, taking firm positions as necessary, but the operative word is being effective in doing the right things, passing the right legislation, enforcing what is passed, so that we don't suffer from the potential cuts that are being proposed, whether they are for NIH, they'll be devastating, or for the EPA, or for the Department of Interior, or for the Department of Commerce, where NOAA is housed. There's so many wonderful and meaningful activities that our federal government supports. And it's incumbent upon us as citizens of the United States, as voters, to speak not only with our elected officials, as we must do, but to speak with each other so that we engage in a long-term process. It's not just a single-year budget that we're talking about. We're talking about attitudes and the manifestations of those attitudes. And that's why my call to my fellow scientists is to be a scientist citizen, to participate fully in the process mm-hmm. in different ways than what we do when we are doing our experiments in the laboratory.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, too, before we go back to phone calls, Dr. Atisha, how is the water situation in Flint now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So next week begins our fourth year on water that we still cannot drink.
Really?
April 24th, 2014 is when the water switch happened.
Oh, my goodness.
And the people of Flint are still on filtered water, and they're also still on bottled water. We have finally had a settlement reached a couple weeks ago that will finally get the pipes out of the ground, but that's going to be a several-year process. And whenever you have pipe work or disturbances, you increase the possibility of releasing lead into the water.
Oh.
So people on Flint need to stay on filters for years to come. But, in terms of the children, which is where my work is, we've really been able to throw a lot of things at these kids to mitigate the impact of this population-wide exposure, from early intervention, literacy programs, healthcare access, nutrition access. But all of those things, many of those things are also on the chopping block of this budget. For example, after-school programs and, Meals on Wheels and, WIC, all of these things are also at risk.
One more phone call, maybe two. Susan in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to propose a connection and a union between the sciences and the arts. Often their value is doubted and their funding is cut. but it is creativity that they share in common.
And I'm sure you'll see a link between the arts and science all over the world. This week at Brain Hats, for heaven's sake, huh? That's
absolutely.
That's pretty artistic. Thanks, Susan, for your call. Connie in Madison, hi.
Hi. I want to speak to the word believe when we're talking about opponents of science. We can't really control the word that opponents use when they say the word believe, but I don't think we should reiterate that word or use it. We shouldn't allow them to frame the discussion around the word believe. I think facts are matters of, like, a table is a table, and just because you can't see it doesn't mean that it's less real. It just takes instruments to find it. So I think we should change our way of speaking about this and not use the word believe in science. We should use accept or perhaps deny science, but not believe it.
All right. Thanks very much for your call. Well, it'll be interesting to see how many people around the world, this isn't just in the United States, participate on Saturday and what comes from this movement. I want to thank both of you so much for being with us. Professor Shakashiri, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Dr. Atisha, thank you so much, and for your work in Flint, too. So important. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks for all of your calls, everybody. To Marika Saval for producing this interesting and important hour. And thanks to Gretchen Brown and Lisa Nalbandian for doing on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Our thanks to Dr. Mona Hana Atisha. She is the doctor who broke the whole story about Flint's water situation. And Professor Shakashiri is at UW-Madison, Distinguished Professor of Chemistry. He will be speaking in Madison as part of the March for Science on Saturday. And the doctor in D.C., co-chair of that event. Thank you, everybody, for listening.